Welcome back to the All Figured Out podcast. I'm Andrea Barr, and we are kicking off the guest interviews for season two with Lisa Michaud, who is going to be talking to us all about generational wealth, what it is, how to build it for our children, and how to do it through real estate investing. Lisa Michaud is incredible. She is a coach and she is an active real estate investor, and she has been for over 12 years. Along with her husband, Troy, they wholly own over 65 rental doors and a few more that are joint venture partnerships, which she's going to describe that in more detail in the episode. And they're continuing to grow and expand. They, as she describes, were accidental real estate investors, and her story is so incredibly fascinating. I learned so much. I was so curious, and she answered all my questions and more. And we ended up getting into an incredible discussion all about real estate investing, but actually more so on generational wealth and money mindset and all these buzzwords that we talk about and hear about. And we have a really honest conversation. We kind of unpack some of my own limiting beliefs around money, or some of my money stories, if you will. And at the very end, we talk about a really exciting event that's coming up March 26th, 28th. It's the Millennial Millionaire Summit. This is being hosted by Lisa and her husband, Troy. Tickets are free. And I'm actually going to be one of the speakers. I'm going to be speaking on how to make more money through negotiations in the corporate world. And there are some incredible guest speakers who are lining up to educate you for free. So there's topics on earning more money, creating a solid financial foundation, and investing in real estate, and just so much more. So we talk about that a little bit at the end, but go into the show notes, grab your free ticket, sign up. You'll get all the resources. You'll join live. You can watch the videos. It's going to be incredible. So that's March 26th to 28th, the Millennial Millionaire Summit. And I hope to see you there. So Lisa Michaud, welcome to the podcast. And I am so sorry that at the very end of the episode, I completely forgot to ask her what she's still trying to figure out. I'm a little bit rusty. It's been a while since I've interviewed, so forgot to ask her that. And I didn't ask her to verbally tell you all where everyone can find her. She is all over the place. So head to the show notes. You can find out all of her information there. And again, hope to see you at Lisa's Millennial Millionaire Summit on March 26th until the 28th. Enjoy. You're listening to the All Figured Out podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Barr. As a career coach for parents, a mom, an entrepreneur, and someone who spent 10 plus years in the corporate world, I still don't have it all figured out. And maybe you don't either. In this podcast, I'll share tools and strategies that I use with my clients. And in the many areas where I don't have things figured out, I'll be bringing you some amazing guest experts to help us fill in the gaps. So tune in each week as we explore how to make career and life decisions that truly work for you, your family, and your big goals. Let's make moves. Lisa Michaud, thank you so much for joining me on the All Figured Out podcast. It is a pleasure to have you sitting here virtually across from me.
Oh, it's such an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we are going to dive into so many different areas, including things like real estate investing, the business that you've built in that area with your husband, continuing to work and both have your own careers and passions and all that type of thing, having kids, all of it. But I am so curious, how did you get into all the different hats that you wear today? Like, how did you get here?
You know what? I sometimes ask myself the same question. I'm like, where did we even begin? And it's so interesting because I think, you know, career paths, we're often taught that they are linear, that you start at point A and then you get to point B and maybe point C and D, and that is the way that it works. And in my experience, and I think I bet for a lot of people that you interview and that you coach, it's actually the opposite. I feel like I'm at D and I have to look back and be like, how did that even happen? I actually have a double major in accounting and finance, which is horrific because I don't even do our taxes. I have an undergrad in a diploma in criminology. And after all of that, I was like, I want nothing to do with legal stuff. I want nothing to do with numbers. I'm going to go to HR. So I started my career in the corporate world in HR. I worked on special projects in the energy industry. And one of the projects I worked on ended up moving jobs to Calgary. And mine was one of them. And I wasn't ready to move. So I had to make a switch. And this was such a pivotal moment for me. And I want to quickly share this little lesson because at the time, I was like young, sweet baby Lisa, 24 years old. And I thought, I'm going to be in HR forever because this is the path that I've chosen. And I had to make the decision too that if I wanted to stay at the company, I had to find a job that was not in HR. And I just spun in circles. So I was like, well, I want to be in HR. I want to stay at this company and there's no jobs. And how the heck do I get out of this mess? And my mentor at the time got me to completely look at things differently. He said, Lisa, what do you like to do? And I, of course, looked at him and was like, are you not listening? I like HR. And he said, no, not the topic of work you like to do, but what kinds of things light you up during the day and get you excited? And what are the things that, make you want to go to the bathroom 5 times in that meeting and will make you want to look at your phone and all those things? And that for me was such a pivotal shift. And I think probably for most of us, if we map a great career, the more we are doing things we love to do, not necessarily the topic, but things that actually make us, excited, things that make us forget to get up and go pee or forget to eat, that's where the real magic is. And so that was a huge game-changing moment for me. From there, I went into learning and development and safety training, teaching up to 500 men on the oil sands site how to do gas detection and confined space entry. From there, I went into continuous improvement, which wanted somebody with 8 years of engineering experience. In case you're following along and good at math, you'll know at this point I have 0 years of engineering experience. Still ended up in that world. And then after a health scare, decided to shake it up again. And my husband and I moved from Northern Alberta to Vancouver. And that for me started my love for coaching, after having a coach in the corporate world. And also after having a health scare made me realize how important finances is and got us to get really serious about not just us being the workhorses and the breadwinners, but making our money work for us and got us interested and serious about real estate investing too.
Oh,
So that's the
wow.
really long winding path to coaching, to real estate investing, to coaching other real estate investors along the path. And I think it's so funny because it doesn't at all make any sense, but there's little gifts and nuggets from every single one of those career paths that have led me to what I do today, which is a lot of talking, a lot of strategizing, a lot of creating, and a lot of fun.
Nice. And what kind of coach do you do? Real estate coaching, and you have the real estate investing, which is its own business and its own thing. And then
Totally.
coaching, you have your own podcast. And then what kind of, who do you work with typically when you're doing
So
coaching?
when I do my coaching, I typically work with women in the space between kind of 30 to 50, women that have some sort of a goal in their life. A lot of times it's around health, wellness, balance, career, family, just enjoying life again more fully, and work with them to have the courage to claim whatever their goal is, to find a way to make that happen, and then get out of their own way with habits and mindset.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that is amazing. We were joking before that like there's a million different ways that we could take this episode today. And I'm gonna rein us in. My intention for this, I was like, Andrea, rein yourself in. I'm a curious cat, but there's a reason why, I mean, there's a million reasons why I wanted to have you on, but there is a specific interest in real estate investing that I wanted to talk to you about. And I don't mean a personal interest, just like a fascination with this word, this phrase real estate investing that we always hear about, that some of us dream about, and we're like, that sounds interesting, that sounds cool. We might listen to like a podcast and someone's like, oh yes, I do real estate investing, and you're like, wow, how sophisticated. But honestly,
Just spoken like someone who doesn't invest in real estate to think it sounds sophisticated and fun.
so yeah, so sophisticated, and it sounds really hard. What is it? So when you tell somebody, you know, we have 90 doors, or no, how many? Like 90, whatever,
It's
like.
so we have I think 86 doors on our own that we own, and then we own several more in a joint venture partnership.
Okay. And so you're like, I have all these doors, and you're like, wow, that's cool. But what does it really mean? Can you break it down for us when you hear that phrase?
Sure. So I want to just quickly start by saying, I'm not a financial advisor, even though I did the accounting and finance. Like, you don't want to see my accounting grades. Let's just say that. You definitely will still want to. Anything that I'm saying here today, you're going to want to still filter it through your own lens. Like the situation that is for me is going to be different from you. Everyone's so personal, so it's really important to have professionals, legal, financial, real estate, on your team that can help you in with your specific goals and situations. So I just want to get that out of the way because hopefully, A, then you're not going to, get mad at me. And also B, just to
You.
remind you, yeah, please don't sue me. Just to remind you that a part of any of us building a great life, a great career, involves outsourcing and getting help. And I think this is one of the first places that, you know, when it comes to your money, you don't have to know everything about money. You don't have to know everything about real estate investing, but you do have to have a great team. And so don't be shy to get advice from professionals that can support you in your journey. So I just want to say that. Okay. So I don't know what the official definition of like, what is real estate investing? We could go to Google. Anyone can go to Google and figure that out. But in my head, it is putting your money or your energy, your time, and building net worth within a real estate asset.
Okay, so, I'm going to cut you off for a second because you've already taught me something or brought to mind something that I didn't consider, and that I think a lot of people say real estate investing, you put your money and that's it. But you just said time and energy as well. I'm sorry to cut you off so soon, but that is interesting. And that's so important.
You know, it really is because, you know, absolutely. I will not, I don't believe that there's any kind of truly passive investment ever. But real estate does take time. Even if you're doing some of the more passive strategies within like some of the options within real estate investing, it's still going to take time and energy. And I'm also going to flip it on the other side. There's actually people that create full partnerships. You know, I mentioned joint venture partner. As an example, one of the ways that people do get started in real estate investing or grow in real estate investing is they actually don't have any money, but they may have experience or they may have the time, the resources, they have the energy to do the investing. So as an example, you know, I know one of the biggest things people are like, I need a lot of money to get into real estate investing. Here's an option for people that may not have that. If you find a great deal and you're willing to manage the deal and you're willing to, you know, figure out renovations, you know, you got to be savvy. This isn't just like, you know, picking any property and saying, I'm an investor, right? You got to know what you're doing here. But if you pick a deal, if you figure out what needs to happen, if you do the property management on it, there are lots of opportunities where people will find another investor that has the money, but doesn't have the time, energy, interest in this. Is like, yeah, on real estate, not interested, but I like the money idea. And people create partnerships that are 50-50, 40-60, whatever that split is. 50-50 is a really typical one. We'll keep it simple for math today. And so one partner is considered your expert partner or your working partner, and the other partner is your money partner. And you both can own 50% or whatever that split is of that asset. And one person's doing the work and one person's money is doing the work. And that's the way that people can get into real estate investing without having their own money. Or on the flip side, a way that you can be in real estate investing without having to take as much time and energy and knowledge as you may think listening to this episode.
Wow. I did not know that that existed. There's going to be a lot that I didn't know existed because I don't know anything about the space, but that is so cool. Smart.
Amazing. It is really cool, right?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, there's the collaborations. We talk about this a lot in business as women, and I think it exists outside of, you know, collaborating on podcasts and collaborating on events. You know, it literally collaborates on entire projects and real estate investments.
Yeah, not everything's like a hashtag collab or like, oh, this is like my collab with someone. No, these are probably like, this has been happening for a long, long time. This is not like
I'm sure that the hashtag joint venture, hashtag JV, I'm sure it's out there in a different world.
Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness. Interesting. And so walk me through, can you talk about the first real estate investing that you did? Or how did you get into a space where you are now calling yourself a real estate investor?
Oh yeah. I mean, we were not at all strategic or planned. It was an accident. You know, we truly became landlords by accident. My husband, he bought his first house in Northern Alberta. Oh my gosh, it was almost 15 years ago. No, almost 20 years ago now. When I moved up to Northern Alberta and I got a job in an energy company, they were offering us amazing incentives if we would buy a home. But the thing is that I needed to buy a house. So I said, you know, do you want to buy one together? And he's like, yeah, sure, let's do this. We're, you know, really, really serious about this. And then we realized we had his house and we had got to make this decision. Do we want to keep his house and rent it out? Or it had appreciated a couple $100,000 in that time and we'd paid down some equity. Or do we want to sell it and keep that money and kind of roll it into the other pile? And that was, I think, a really pivotal moment for us. And I'm sure a lot of people in any journey, like there's always these moments that are like inflection points that allow you to jump off to the next level. So this really was our first level, right? And we decided, you know what, let's just keep it. In 25 years, it'll be paid off. And we, you know, I'm not I'm not sure what pensions are going to look like and all that stuff. I don't have a lot of faith in it, to be honest. And so I was like, you know what? This will be a couple $100,000 in retirement. It'll be some cash flow for us. It'll be great. It'll be paid off. This will be wonderful. So that really was literally our first quote investment. I don't think we identified as investors. I don't think we really didn't know what we do, what we didn't know. We literally just had this kind of extra house that we had, and we decided to keep it. Now, it was also really scary. I mean, it sounds like we were a bit flippant about it, and we totally were. Like, we didn't really know what we didn't know. And I remember that first night, we've now, we had a $350,000 mortgage on one property and $800,000 mortgage on the other. We're 23 years old, and here we are going to bed that night with like $1.2 million in mortgages. And this is a while ago. This is like
Yeah.
$50 million in 2024 dollars or something like that. But it was a lot of money. And so it was really, really scary. And we really had to make the decision, like, are we going to do this? And do we really care about our financial future? What are we willing to put on the line? What are we willing to work towards? How important is this to us? And what are we willing to do? And what are we not willing to do? And we figured, at the time we were young, we were still kind of at the beginning points of our career. And we figured, like, even if we mess this up completely, we can still move home if we need to. We can move in with friends. We are willing to figure this out, and we'll come back better. We'll learn something if we make a mistake, and we'll figure it out along the way. So that's how we got started.
Oh my goodness. That is so fascinating. And yeah, I'm thinking back, like an $800,000 mortgage starting out your, like, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's, yeah, that is scary. And so you became landlords, so you had to find tenants for the first time. You were experiencing what that's like. Wow.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were pretty lucky that for that one ended up working out really easily. My husband ended up was working with someone that was also looking for a home to live in. And so that worked out perfectly. And that tenant was in there the entire time that we rented out that house. And that was the first time, the only time, this may also surprise you, that we have ever actually looked for tenants, managed tenants, and been, quote, landlords in the sense of operations day to day.
Oh my goodness. Okay, that was going to be my next question is how do you manage the landlord situation? Because I'm going to be honest, Lisa, that's my worst nightmare.
I think
Landlording
it's a
things is actually personally, it's not, is personally my worst nightmare. So how did you get away from that?
We made a lot of mistakes. There was a lot of things we didn't know. But one of the things we were very clear on, and I think we did right from the beginning, was we knew, hey, we love our jobs. We like our careers. We're not looking to get out of those. And this is where a lot of people are like, where do I start with real estate investing? It really depends on like what your goal is and what you want. For us, it was to create an income. It was to create like longer term wealth, to have some stability in retirement. It was not to give ourselves another job because we already loved our jobs. And so we right off the beginning, we said, okay, we could probably ma manage on our own, I don't know, 5 units, maybe 10, maybe 15 if we're feeling like we never want to sleep again. But there comes a limit where we can only do so much. And if we actually want to scale, and if we actually want to grow or like sleep or enjoy our lives, we're gonna have to outsource this. So that to me is one of the biggest things that we really that I want to tell people listening to this, that you don't have to be the landlord. You don't have to be the person that is going through applications, that is putting in tenants, that is picking up the check every month, that is plunging toilets, that is dealing with the power's out, there's a leak here, whatever those things are. And I'll tell you like the downsides of it. We have to pay somebody to do that, so it takes away the immediacy of our money. But it allows us to scale, and there's no way we could do what we do without having an incredible set of property managers, not just one, multiples, and having teams and people that help us to manage these investments. So that is one of the biggest things that we actually did right from the beginning. It might actually be the only one we did right from the beginning.
It sounds like there's a level of you have of having to release as well. Like I imagine, it sounds like you can't get be perhaps too attached. Like you can't be like, let's go to this, fancy part of town because it's trendy and cool. You have to look at it more from a business perspective. That's one thing I'm kind of thinking about hearing. But then there's the other is the having to release and let people manage it without you and have the autonomy to make decisions, because if they didn't, that's just why even hire them, because it would still be so much work for you if they had to ask you questions. Is that how kind of how it goes?
Absolutely. And I think you hit on a couple important things here. There is a shift to go from the buyer's mindset, like I'm buying a home that I love, to going into an investor's mindset, into I'm buying a business. And it's not necessarily like always a perfectly clear cut line. You know, I'll give you an example. We own a property in Kelowna. We are emotionally attached to this property. Like we've been looking at it since 2011. We didn't buy it until 2017. You know, we bought it when I was newly pregnant with the vision of taking our daughter there in the summer. We got married at the hotel across the street. Like what that investment is, like the quote return on investment ROI, return to us is not purely money, which is actually a really good thing because it's probably one of our worst performing investments. So it's a good thing we get satisfaction somewhere else. So that is something I want to say. Like there are also like lifestyle investments you can consider, but it's really important to be aware of that and to know that you're that's where you're what kind of investment you want to have versus literally our other 89 properties are all a math equation. And though that is a different lens to look through things and say, is this a functional business? Like, can I make money on this? Can I sustain this? Can I maintain it? Can I provide a great service for, you know, the people that are living there? Can we provide a safe and comfortable home? That's really important. That's well maintained. And can we do that while being sustainable? And if we're not making money, it's not sustainable, right? Like no one can prop up any, most of us cannot afford to prop up a whole bunch of other housing for other people. And so it's really important to get into that investor's mindset.
Right.
And yeah, it has been a journey. Like, and my husband's not here to embarrass him today because he just loves when I tell the story. But I remember distinctly laying in bed in northern Alberta, and we had that one property, right? We had that one door, and it was like, okay, you know, maybe we should look at a different market, right? Like maybe we should look at somewhere else. And he looks at me, he's like, I don't think I could ever invest somewhere that I couldn't drive to in like half an hour. And you know, I'm gonna fast forward here. Our closest rental property is a 4-hour drive away, and our farthest one is like a 54-hour drive away if you take the shortcut through the US. And we bought, I wanna say, at least 6 or 8 buildings without ever seeing them. So this has been a journey. That's another inflection point, I would say, of recognizing, hey, we can do this, but we have to be able to let go of that control. And it's definitely a journey.
Oh my gosh, you're hitting on so many questions I was gonna have. So I was gonna ask, like, oh, are you just in my head? I picture all these little 90 doors in and around the lower mainland of Vancouver or British Columbia. Like, that's so interesting. But no, because you're saying, no, you're looking at a business. You're not looking at some convenient thing you can pop in to go meet the, like, no, that's not really part of the business equation, it sounds like. Question I have for you is, so you said that there's a couple reasons why you could get into real estate investing, and one of them being there could be income from it. Then it's a place to put your money to invest and to grow for retirement and things like that. Would you say that? I guess the question is, like, are you able to have all of those goals? Would you say so? If I were to have my first property, my first store that I want to buy, is it reasonable to say, I think that I could get a little bit of income from it, and I believe that it will continue to be a place to grow my money as well? Or do you have to pick one?
That's a great question. Okay, so there is definitely a scale on this, and it also depends very much on how much you have, how much you want to put down. So, for example, you can actually quote unquote buy cash flow. So, say for example, I have, and I'm just going to try and use really easy numbers. Let's say, for example, there's a place that's $100,000 and I have $100,000. I could put that whole $100,000 down on a place. And yeah, I'm just going to make up rental numbers here. Let's say you get $1,000 a month for rent. Let's say your property taxes are $200 a month. Let's say your other expenses are, you know, $300 a month. Then you'd be cash flowing $500 a month. But you had to put down an entire $100,000 to get that $500 a month. So in a lot of markets, such as Vancouver is a lower mainland, Toronto, a lot of major centers in Canada, that's the only way that you're going to be able to cash flow typically is if you are buying it. Like you are putting down a significant chunk of money in order to buy that cash flow. And there's, I won't get into like financial advising, but you'll want to understand what the opportunity cost of that is. Because your $100,000, instead, if let's say you put down $10,000 on that place or $20,000, and you were able to leverage the other $80,000, which is a hugely powerful part of real estate. Yes, you have to pay a mortgage, so you're going to have less cash flow. But now, if your place goes up to, let's say it appreciates a couple percent over the next few years, so let's say it goes up to $110,000. All of a sudden, your $20,000 has to now, you've made $10,000 on that. So now it's, you've gone from 20 to 30,000. That's pretty significant. That's like a 50% growth. Versus if I put down $100,000 and it goes to 110, I've only made $10,000. I've only made 10% on that money.
Interesting. Good
So
math. Good math accounting.
this is a, thank you. Thank you. I'll go back and tell my tax teacher that. Thank you. Yeah.
Just
So,
makes sense. I've never heard it been put like that. Thank you.
yeah. So there's a lot of different profit centers when it comes to real estate. There's a lot of different ways you can make money. And it's like, what are your goals? Also, what does the property in the market allow you to do? And what is the best utilization of all of that? Because rental income is definitely one way you can make money. But even like buying, you can get instant equity when you buy something that's undervalued. You can literally make money on the buy. We've done that multiple times. There's longer term appreciation. There's doing renovations on a property that force the appreciation. There's the whole leverage thing, that math that I just shared about. There's the pay down of your principal over time. There's the fact that you can refinance things over time and come back and get that initial investment and actually pull that $20,000 you first put in. You can actually over time in, like with a good investment, you can actually go back and let's say the property goes up to 150,000, you could refinance, pull out that initial 20,000, and then go put that on another property and do it again and again and again and again. So there's lots of different profit centers in real estate. So it's not necessarily that you have to pick like one or the other. It's just that some markets are going to give you more opportunities to do that. And also your own personal assets, how much you want to invest, your personal goals, and also the sleep at night. You have to sleep at night. Like nobody wants to do this and be so highly leveraged or stressed out about it in whatever capacity, or have calls from tenants all the time that is actually affecting your lifestyle. Like the whole point of this, I don't know, maybe this is goes back to your very first question, what is real estate investing? In my opinion, it should be using real estate to support your goals and support the life you want to have, not the other way around.
And how does it look now that you are a mom? And tell us about your family and how does this all look and work as a family unit?
Well,
Because 90 doors, that's a lot.
it's hilarious. It's funny. So we live in downtown Vancouver, and like the average condo is probably at least $1 million. Well, I think it was last year for Christmas, our daughter, because we talk about real estate, and our daughter looked at the tower next to us, and she's like, "I want that tower for Christmas." And I'm like, "Oh, that's ambitious. We love that. We love that for you." Also, you're
That's
probably gonna
so
have to
cute.
settle for a stuffy because you're four, and that's like a $300 million building. But we'll get there. What does it look like? I mean, truth be told, we've done the majority of our real estate investing since we've become parents. Like we only had three doors when she was born. That year we bought a sixplex when she was about 9 months old. And so we went from three to nine. So we tripled our portfolio that year. And then now we've kind of 10x'd it since then. So it's definitely has its ups and downs. It has its moments where it's really hard. Generally, we try and include her in these conversations. Again, she's six, but she's still like whenever we show her a building, she's like, "Oh, are we gonna live in that?" We're like, "No," but we're teaching her the investor mindset from the very beginning. I definitely find like balancing like housework and the real like there's the mail that comes in associated with all these properties is still a fair amount of work. There's bank runs that still have to happen even though they're not here. So really grateful now that things have stabilized, that she is in school, that we have before and after school care. My husband, he does honestly like the majority of those things. Like there's a lot of work that comes in. He is doing the bookkeeping. Thank you very much, honey. He is on the phone with property managers, keeping track of renovations and scheduling, financing those pieces. So we have to definitely communicate a lot. We have to appreciate what each other brings to the table. Like I've been really helpful in bringing in investors, helping lead our networking events that we do, leading the coaching that we do with our clients around real estate. And he's really great at the number side and making sure that the deals that we buy, that he's putting in a ton of conservative estimates in there, that they make sense for us in our long-term strategy and vision, and that, that they're being managed day to day.
Wow. So it is a lot of work, but he, and wait, am I getting this wrong? Does he also have a full-time job?
He does more than a full-time job. Yeah. So he actually works away. So he works in Northern BC for 2 weeks at a time, and he's home for 2 weeks at a time. So I solo parent a lot, which is wild and pretty difficult. But when he's home, he has the space. And that, when in 2020, when COVID first hit and things got shut down, we saw this also as this golden moment of like, hey, like we literally cannot do most of the things that we love to do, travel, leave the house, all these fun things. And so we're like, this is a great moment for us to learn even more, to go from nine to, as we go 90 doors, right? And so him having that kind of schedule ha has been helpful in some ways. Also kind of makes it hard sometimes as well.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's incredible. So that's, and do you find that there's, what does balance look like for your family? Like, are you sitting on the, I can't even imagine just sitting on the couch. It seems like there's a lot going on. How do you do it?
That is pretty accurate. I think being very intentional about our time and our priorities. So I say no to a lot of things, especially right now. I am very intentional about exercise. I do that really consistently. I'm very intentional about sleep. Health is a big priority, so I will make appointments and do whatever I need to for health. But a lot of things are no's. Like I don't get a lot of one-on-one time with friends away from my kid. I'm definitely not at every event in the city that I want to be at. Like I love all the different fun networking events. I don't do a lot of speaking engagements in this season, easy, like a few, a handful, but not a lot. So definitely there's a lot of no's. There's a lot of like, yeah, just having to be like super, super on it. And we also outsource. Like we outsource in the business and we also outsource at home. And that is a key thing too. If you want to talk about that, I'm happy to share there too.
Please. So it sounds like you were in the business of, yes, real estate and coaching and all the things, but it sounds like you're in the business of outsourcing because in order to do all those things, you probably manage a lot of people. What's the number actually? Like, how many people do you think are working for you to run the show?
Oh, that's such a good question. Okay, so the good thing is that our property managers, like they have full teams. So we
Right.
don't have to navigate, like for example, a really good one example is the short-term rental. So the short-term rental, which is also if anybody's following the news in BC right now, it's a bit of a question mark what that's going to look like. But essentially, in the past, we typically would have a student or lots of times travel nurses, things like that would be in the place between September and May, and then we short-term rental in the summer. So you're talking about someone that has to look after like who's the long-term tenant, and then the short-term bookings, the marketing, the cleaning, the turnover, all those things that come with a short-term rental. So the team that we chose to work with is a team that can do all of that. So we have one or two contacts on their team, and then they look after the rest. So they like it's as simple as them sending us a message and being like, hey, do you want any time blocked off for you to come? And hey, we're thinking about doing this September to May or September to June. Does that work for you? And us saying yes or no. So I think it's also great to have people that have their own teams and are also leaders in that way, because otherwise like managing people is there's a reason why we have managers and not, like I'm not going to go down the cynical path on this. Like that is a really important job to be able to lead others and to be able to delegate the work. And so if we still had to do that for like contractors and renovation teams and all that, like it just wouldn't work. So we are very grateful that our managers are, they do the managing of their teams.
Yes. Oh, that's so interesting. That's a really cool visual too. Like you're hiring the team that has the experts, the people who are great at what they do, but you're not having to talk to the person who is doing the marketing or who is the specialist in like the electrician and things like that, because that would be your full-time job, no doubt. Like we all know
Absolutely.
how much it takes to coordinate emails, Oh my goodness, emails.
Emails, yeah, and a household, like you know how much work it is, right? So,
Yes.
yeah, it is, it's a lot. And so we definitely rely on other people being the experts in their field too.
Yeah. And then what does your outsourcing? I just have this feeling that there's outsourcing happening for you on the home front and
Yeah,
life. And what does that
definitely.
look like?
Definitely. So this has been a long time coming because it's not natural. My husband and I, we didn't grow up in households where this was a normal thing. Like, I don't even think my
You didn't have a
parents thought
staff?
of, No, my parents didn't even get a babysitter for us until I was probably like 10 and begging, like, because everyone else had babysitters. I was like, I just want a babysitter, like I just want to have that. And so, like, it was really, my parents didn't never even hired a cleaner. Like, it's just to this day, like, they really struggle with that kind of stuff. Or no one would have mowed their lawn. Like, it was just not a part of the way that they were brought up, and therefore I was brought up. So, a really simple but kind of funny one is, like, even living in a condo has meant outsourcing a lot of things. We lived in a 3,000 square foot house in Northern Alberta with a triple car garage, and we were always, it was a brand new house too. Like, there wasn't, it's not like this was an old house we had to fix. It was brand new. And there was still, like, a fence to paint, a deck to stain, a driveway to shovel, a walkway to reseal, people coming in to fix something on the roof or air conditioning or whatever that was. And living in a condo has changed that, because we don't wash the windows. We don't worry about outside maintenance. When we go traveling, we close the door and we leave. Like, there's just so, like, that is an example that's kind of really probably accessible to a lot of people, that they don't even realize that you're already doing. Like, you are already outsourcing some of that when it comes to living in a condo or a strata, and having them manage the insurance and negotiating with the broker every year. Like, there's just so many pieces there that gets outsourced. So that was actually, it's a small one, but it makes a big difference. We also very slowly have started to get cleaners. And that is just game changing, because, like, I don't need them every day, but I need someone to come in and do the deep cleaning, because otherwise it would just not happen. It would be so difficult. So that's been a really big game changer.
And I
Over the
imagine it's not
years.
necessarily, sorry to interrupt, but it's not always that. I'm sure you could do it, but it would mean that you're having to push things to other times. It's just that's I always find that discussion so interesting. It's like, but I can do it, or I have time to do it. It's like you have 24 hours in a day, but there's a lot you have to fit in, especially as a parent. And so you have to reprioritize, and that's when that deep cleaning, the washing of the floors, the baseboards, it's just sometimes it's just not going to happen. Or some people find it cathartic and it is going to happen, and in which case they can outsource something else or not.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we've been pretty intentional about, and my family is my priority, like, spending time with my daughter, spending time with my husband, my parents, like, the people that are, like, in my closest circle, like, that is a priority. And I used to do a lot of training on time management. I did a lot of workshops on this and coaching around it. And, like, yes, we all have the same 24 hours, but we don't all have the same amount of responsibilities or things that have to happen in those 24 hours. And there is a trade-off. Like, there, and yes, I could clean it, but it would mean I'd probably have to turn the TV on for my daughter so she could sit there for 2 or 3 hours. And, like, I don't want that. Like, I'd rather spend that time taking her to Science World, or spend that time doing a craft with her, or go on a play date or something. And so I think there is, especially as parents, like, when you have kids, like, your entire day is spoken for all the time, every day. And so everything you're doing that is not involving your kids is a choice that you're not spending time with them. And that's not to say, like, obviously, like, I go to the gym, I do hang out with friends, I do work that I enjoy, all, like, whatever that is for you. Maybe it's getting your nails down or going for a walk or whatever. Those things are important. But it's to recognize, like, what are the things that are not actually filling my cup? And how do I make sure I'm spending as much of my time as possible being intentional about doing the things that are joyful or are a priority for me?
Right. So if you are spending that time away from your children, partner, family, is it doing something like cleaning where you're like, wow, this is a waste of time because it's about to get dirty again? First of all, it's not something that I love, and I'm away from my family. And it's like, it's check, check, check. Boom, that seems like an easy decision for that person. That's so versus to your point, going to the gym, you're like, no, I can't outsource that. I don't want to outsource that. And I'm leaving my daughter, and I feel really good about that. And eventually, she might be a little bit upset when you first walk out the door, whatever, but she will feel good about that decision that I made for myself because I'm showing up as a better mom.
Absolutely. I'm a way better mom if I've spent the hour and a bit going to a Legree class versus I've spent that time cleaning the bathroom and she goes in there 10 seconds later and, like, messes it all up again. Like, I have some chill in me after a workout. I do not after cleaning. So it is a totally different energy around that too, right? And I think it's important to, like, I mean, we've all heard, like, you can't pour from an empty cup, but I still see, like, and I've spewed this BS too sometimes. So, like, I've been in this too. Like, And there are times where like that has to be like some of the boring stuff around the house has to be like my time for the day. That is just a part of it, especially with my husband working away. But I don't think that that needs to be the self. I don't think that's like self-care every day. It might be a few minutes of peace and quiet. It might be some time to listen to a podcast or to have like some time away, and that's important. But like overall, like that's not the stuff that over the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years builds the kind of life that I want or that I care about or the relationships that I want to have or the impact I want to have.
That's a cool way of looking at it too. I really like that visual of thinking about that investment of time as like compound interest to continue on this finance path. Lisa and Andrea's Financial Accounting Institute, here for
So much math
it.
today.
So much math, compound interest. Who am I? But in all seriousness, it's you're right. It's like that cleaning, continuing to think about cleaning the bathroom because it's the worst, and it takes so much time. Like all, if you think about all those hours you'd be spent cleaning that bathroom versus having made a, $10,000 investment, say, in going back to the real estate thing and outsourcing that to a property management team. And maybe you're making $1 a day from that or $1 a month, but compound interest, that energy you've spent in that space versus cleaning the bathroom, boom, all of a sudden, let's just pretend you make $1 million by the time you're 60. And it's not all about money, but I know that you're really passionate too about, you talk about generational wealth, and you're somebody who's not just looking at your own life. I know you've talked about thinking of your daughter, which I think is really cool. I think a lot of people of our age don't yet think about that and like the foundations and the building blocks that we're putting in now for the future generations. Can you speak to that? Can you speak to generational wealth and what that looks like and means for you? When did you start to even think about that?
Yeah, so it's funny because this is actually something that definitely started more as something that was important to my husband and has slowly become more important to me. So generational wealth is basically the idea of passing along assets from one generation to another. So as parents, it's something to pass along to your children or even grandchildren. And what this looks like, why this might matter, is going to depend so much on who you are and what your family looks like and what your priorities are. But some of these things could be, it can be like after you've died, but it can also be while they're alive too. So the goal could be something like having money to help your children with education. That is an example of like generational wealth being transferred down. It could be helping your children start a business if they have an idea. It could be helping them buy a home. It could be passing along an existing business. And then it could be other assets like real estate or stocks or Bitcoin or like art. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the art investing world. Like there's just so many different things. So generational wealth can be like an ongoing transfer. It can be a one-time thing, or it can be a bit of a blend of both of those. So real estate, you could own a property and pass that down. Or if you own the property and it appreciates and then you sell it, you can use that money to pass along. You can also use a real estate asset if it's appreciated and you've paid down the mortgage over time. You can actually then borrow money against that asset and then use that to leverage again. So you're again borrowing money that's there and able to like reinvest that into either more real estate or whatever it is that you choose to do. So for us, like our goal, I believe it was Bill Gates that said it, and I really like it. Like he said, he wants to give his kids enough money to do anything, but not enough money that they can do nothing. And
Oh,
I
wow.
think that's a really great way to think about it is, enough money for my kid to like have a great life and be able to do what she wants to do, but not so much that she can hang out, and do nothing. Because I do believe purpose is so important. And they're like, oh my gosh, like if you've watched like anything around the Blue Zones or read the book and like, so much out there, but like purpose is really important. Like we need a reason to get up, we need a reason to keep moving. Like that is such a meaningful and important part of life, and we don't want to take that away from her either. So that I think that's important too. I should also
Wow.
say one last thing I want to say around like generational wealth, and I haven't read this in any definition, but I really believe that generational wealth for me, and this is like probably the more important part than the actual money or the assets, but it's also teaching kids, teaching our daughter a positive and healthy mindset around money. A positive and healthy mindset around financial stewardship, understanding her own value and the value she brings to this world, the value of work and purpose, and the value of giving back. And I think like that to me is also in generational wealth. And I like that to me is, I believe like even more important than what the actual assets are. It's like teaching her how to appreciate money, how to love money, how we create it, how to steward it, how to take care of it, how to grow it, like all these important things, and having a really how to give it away meaningfully, and how to spend it, like all these things that like I'm still learning as we go too, but I really want to pass that along to her because I think that healthy view of money is really lacking for so many people. And that little change, I think, can shift so many things for her, for anybody listening, for me, for all of us, and for our entire world. If we can shift money from being like this something that's evil or something that we like desperately need, to instead of being like a tool that can support us and something that when we do it well, we're actually being paid for our gifts and being paid for the amazing value we bring for helping other people and doing things to impact others.
Oh my gosh, I absolutely love that. I love the way that you just flipped it. You completely flipped it. You flipped it from being this thing that we grow up and we learn about and we see in Hollywood because it's fun and it makes a way better story, being frivolous and being tied to material goods. And money equals material assets. I like it's just, or talking about money is a bad thing. You know, like this just saying talking about money is a bad thing. No, a certain type of talking about money. You're not going to go and ask somebody how much they make. There's a, you know, there's cool ways to do it. But talking, like my girlfriends and I talk about things like investing. We talk about life insurance. Like we talk about these things, and it's cool and it's interesting and it's empowering. And all of us learn something different from each other when we talk about these things in a positive, healthy way of, you know, how are we, you know, catching, like watching our back. And, you know, one girlfriend is a financial planner and she talks about these things like life insurance. And then talking about like, we have funny conversations. I don't know. I'm going off on a total tangent, but we've had funny conversations. If money were no object, you know, what would you do in the world? And that is money, and that's an appreciation for money. But then there's, you know, if you, I don't know, I just think it's so important to just flip it like you've just done and say, money is so much more than just the material good. It is giving it away. It is unlocking your vision and your goals, because a lot of times to achieve our vision, to achieve our goals, or to, you know, to be reaching and moving and guiding in the direction of our vision and goals, often takes money in some way. And it's just part of it. It's just part of the ecosystem there. And like, man, I just love that. I just think, you know, what comes to mind is just my mom taking us, my mom and stepdad taking us on absolutely beautiful vacations growing up. I was so incredibly privileged to do that. And we were not the kids that had the wild brand name things. Like if it was super important and it was like high quality or something like that, maybe, but just because somebody else had that thing, absolutely not. We were not that family. But I have really cool experiences of like going to Japan and seeing other cultures, or going to theater. And, you know, it's like that was, and those are the values of my family. I just went on a massive tangent because I'm so fired up about the way that you've just flipped that. And it's kind of cool that we're talking about this in the sense of something like real estate investing, which is one vehicle and one way in which a person can use money for good. Like, you know, we're kind of bringing it full circle here.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And that's exactly it. You know, like, I wonder how many people, and because the conversation around money, I mean, we're taught not to have it. We're taught that it, you know, it's rude. It can be inappropriate. And I, you know, I always, we're not taught about it at school. Like, it's not really focused on. But like what you just said, it like money, it allows you, if you know what you're doing, to live your values. And if your values are experiences, you know, you get to do that. And you, it's really, it's not impossible. Obviously, you can still have experiences and live your values in other ways without money. But money, like money is an amplifier. Money amplifies your ability to do these things and to live your values and your goals better, you know, like farmers markets, you know, you believe in local businesses and sustainability, like you need money at a farmer's market, you know, and how beautiful it is to be able to give that, right? Supporting local businesses, supporting causes you care about, right? Like being able to be generous with people you love, being able to tip the requisite, you know, 500% in Vancouver, whatever that is these days, on,
500%
at the supermarket, whatever that is, right?
No, like, it's the
it just
liquor
allows
store.
You to do this.
What?
It's everywhere.
We digress.
Yeah, but no, I think that that's like that's such a great example of where, you're very clear on your values and money aligns with that. And like a lot of people haven't even been able have never been taught that concept of like money should support your values and support your goals. Like so many people like just don't know how to do that and are spending unconsciously or they're hoarding unconsciously as well. And not like there can be a real disconnect between the way people feel about their money and the reality of their money situation.
That's an interesting one, the hoarding. I mean, that could be a whole other episode. And just being kind of scared of it, like scared it's going to go away. So you just park it and leave it here and you don't do anything with it. But is that, and if you did want to have generational wealth for your future, like that's for your children, that's not actually necessarily always going to be the best thing to do. Or I don't know. That's, of course,
Totally.
independent to each person. So don't listen here. But
There's a
oh
really big
my
difference
gosh.
between doing it intentionally because it aligns with a value,
Yes.
because it is what allows you to sleep at night, it is what is important to you, versus doing something out of fear and doing it unconsciously and disconnected from reality. So I think those are like that is the litmus test of all of these things that we're when we're talking about like investing, spending, generational wealth, time even. It's like, why are you doing it? What's the intention and energy behind it?
That is such a good way of putting it. It's true. Like parking your money, like I keep saying, is like in one, even if it's in a savings account. To your point, if that's the value for that person, if that makes them feel great and it checks, a number of boxes for them, and then that's intentional. That's all you could hope for anybody in the world, is just to be living intentionally and just to be doing things in an intentional way without doing it based on fear or being like, I don't even have all the information, but I'm scared to get the information. Like that can be a place that a lot of us make decisions on too. Health. I mean, like you could be like, ugh, I feel a little something, but like, nah, I don't even want to go there. I don't want to get that test. I'm scared. Like there's so many examples in life where when you operate from fear, it could just be worse.
Absolutely. I think, and I love that we're having this conversation. And I know that you really, you want people, like the biggest thing is education, like being willing to like ask the question, being willing to be educated and knowing like whatever the consequences of your decision are. And I don't say consequences purely to be negative, like there's positive consequences too. But like, what is the impact going to be of your decisions? And if you have to be willing to step into that arena and find out the answer.
Oh, what a wonderful place to end up. I want to hear about the conference that you have coming up, because I think that I'm going to preface this by telling you something I haven't yet told you. So Lisa has a conference coming up, and she has so kindly invited me to come and speak, and I feel very honored to be a part of it. The name of the conference, it took me a second to be okay with it. I'm putting that, that's me being
Can tell me
super
about it. Tell me about it.
vulnerable
I love it. Thank you for
and
saying
real. Okay,
this.
Lisa, say the name of the conference.
It is the Millennial Millionaire Summit.
So here's Andrea being asked by Lisa, can you join the Millennial Millionaire Summit? And I said, tell me about it. And I was like, wow. And Lisa will tell you about it because she'll do a way better job. I was like, after I heard the description, I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to be part of that. That sounds incredible. I love the ethos. At first blush, I was like, oh, does this sound like I'm, and this is no shade to the name that you've chosen, because I think it's perfect. But my small mind, my money story is, oh, but when I'm promoting this, are people going to think that I'm like just all about money, or like there's this like greedy side to me, or that I've all of a sudden become part of this like money cult or something? Like, I don't even know. My mind went in such weird places. I have not told you this, but I think that this conversation is just like, you're going to be okay with it. And I want to just drop that there,
I
because,
love it.
oh, it's like money. It's weird, right?
Thank you so much for sharing that. Like you and everybody listening, I bet you there are so many people that have had those thoughts or those feelings at some point in this conversation. And
Yes.
it is like absolutely, it is a journey. So I'm so glad that you said that. And I love that you said it. And like, yes. And it's so also so funny because it's like, if we had this pot, let's say we were talking about like pizza. And you were like promoting, like, I love this pizza shop, right? No one's gonna be like, oh, Andrea, she's all about pizza. She doesn't even care about anything else, right? Like, who does she think she
She's
is? Like, now she's part of like
obsessed
the
with
pizza club. Like,
part of a pizza
that's not,
cult.
Right? Like people don't think that. It's so funny, but some, for some reason, when you talk about money, it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, she must only care about that. Must be like that's only thing that her, she wants to do is make money, and she no longer cares about us. And it's just so interesting, the stories and the patterns that run deep about money. So I love that you share that so much, because I know you're not the only one. And also thank you for trusting me and being, you know, for sharing that and for being also willing to get on board with something, even though people might think you've joined some weird money cult. So thank you.
Well, I'm really excited about your money cult. Can you tell us more about the money cult conference called
Absolutely.
Millennial Millionaire?
It's not a cult. It's not a cult. I do have to have a disclaimer in there.
Not a cult.
It's a fun club. Okay, so the Millennial Millionaire Summit, it is a 3-day event, and we are so excited to have Andrea as a part of it. Here's the thing. So many people are curious about real estate, are like, oh, I think I might want to do that someday. A lot of people kind of have it in the back of their heads, or maybe look at listings sometimes. They get excited. But there's some steps to take. And kind of like you said, it's a lot easier to be like, oh, that seems too hard, or I don't know what I'm doing. And life is busy. Life is so busy. I get it. So we put it off for like another 6 months, another year, and another 5 year, and time goes by. And here's the thing, like, I'm a millennial. My husband's an old man trapped in a millennial body. Most of our friends are millennials. And a lot of us now are like, hey, like we can't party like we're 20. And we also can't manage our money like we're 20 anymore. Like a lot of us, our careers are actually earning a decent income. Some people are coming into inheritances. People who may have bought real estate may have now have some significant assets. And yet we are still operating without the knowledge of what to actually do with our money. And so I want to change that. I want to help people along that spectrum. So the Millennial Millionaire Summit is 3 days. Day one is all about earning more money, because sometimes that is a part of the puzzle. Like sometimes you need more money for the lifestyle you want to have, and that's totally okay. So we have a variety of different entrepreneurs coming in to speak about some different businesses. And we have the lovely Andrea talking about what it looks like in a corporate career to get promotions, get raises, things like that, to earn more money. So I'm so excited to have you be a part of that, because it is such an important part of the conversation.
Oh, one of my favorite topics is just how to squeeze it out of a company. No, I'm kidding. But no, how to advocate for yourself. I'm so excited to talk about
Yes.
it. It's been, I think it was such a big part of my career. Yeah, and I'm so pumped to be a part of it. Thank you. Okay, so
Well, I'm
that's
so pumped
making
to have you
money,
too,
making
because
more
it's super
money,
time. Any
important
more money? Yeah.
for
Day
parents too.
two. Totally. Day two is all about the financial basics and the foundation. So we have some incredible financial planners coming in. We have an accountant coming in. We also have money mindset experts throughout the summit as well, because these are things that do come up, and they're scripts that they're so common, and we don't even know that they're there until someone invites you to be part of the Millennial Millionaire Summit and you want to run away screaming. Then day three is all about real estate investing. So we've pulled together some of our favorite friends, connections, experts in the space, to help us understand some of the different ways of investing in real estate. So, you know, we'll have someone talking about joint ventures. We're going to talk about multifamily, because that's really our favorite. We have someone talking about short-term rentals, just a variety of different things. And the point of this is not to walk away with like a huge to-do list, but to instead come and, you know, if you're like, I know I want to get my money house in order, but I don't know where to start. To listen and see what stage of the path you're on, and walk away with what your next step is, and have a plan for at least one thing that you can do next, whether it's knowing you need to make more money and having a couple ideas how to do that, whether it's negotiating a raise or doing a side hustle or creating a new product. Maybe it is getting your financial house in order, and maybe it's learning a little bit more about what are some of the other investment strategies out there besides mutual funds, or maybe talking to a fee-only financial planner, understanding what the difference is between the financial planner in your bank and a fee-only planner, or maybe it's understanding what tax strategies you might be able to use as a Canadian. And being able to walk away with that, or knowing, hey, you know what? I've got some money. I got some financial foundation in place. I want to go into real. I want to invest some of my money into real estate. Knowing, having an idea of what strategy might be the right one for you, whether it is multifamily BRRRs like we do, private lending, which is more passive. Maybe it's joint venturing. But just like knowing what your next step is, that's the biggest part that we want people to walk away from.
I'm so excited. And see, can everybody hear how wonderful that sounds and how my small mind heard Millennial Millionaire Summit, sorry, I kept saying conference. And I think it encompasses it. I think that is the right name for it. But Andrea will be joining the mindset sessions because clearly she's, I don't consider myself with money issues or money baggage or anything like that, but we've all got something, some sort of story, money story. We don't have to call it baggage. Okay, as you were talking, I want to share some advice for anyone who wants to join the conference. I have joined a lot being an entrepreneur now, having so many wonderful friends like Lisa who have run summits or conferences and things like that. They can seem kind of overwhelming. If I were to give any advice on entering something like this or any sort of educational forum of this nature, it would be to go into this with a couple of questions in mind versus or decide that you just want to go and be a sponge. So when I've gone into some things like this, like I go to business conferences and I get very overwhelmed and very excited. I'm a very excitable person, as many people know. But the best takeaways that I've ever gotten would be have if I've gotten in with some sort of like question or like how might I or how might we or anything like that, so that you can kind of focus where you're at. To Lisa's point, it's like if you're like, I want to start a business, it's like, how might I start a business that supports my values and vision and financial goals? And then you can go through all the different sessions with that lens so that you're not feeling overwhelmed by all the shiny objects. Anyways, that's my advice.
That is amazing, amazing advice. So valuable. I took notes on that. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna put that in an email somewhere.
I'll send you a
So good.
clip. We'll get a little transcript of this.
So good. Kate,
But
can I share one last thing before we hop off? I'm sorry.
heck
Can
yeah,
I say,
girl.
okay, so I want to quickly share two more things around outsourcing because I
Yes.
think I this is again mindset stuff I've had to get over. But like one of the things that I always said, I was like, I'm gonna get a private chef one day. Like, who hasn't wanted a private chef, right? And then I'm like, okay, so I need to make an extra like $75,000 to pay for a chef, blah, 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 blah. And nothing. About 4 years ago, I realized, like, oh wow, like I don't actually necessarily need a private chef, but like, what if I could even get a couple of pre-made meals delivered to my house? And it was funny because I even had a block around that. It was like, oh, that's too expensive and I won't be able to do that. And I looked at our budget and like figured it out. I was like, well, maybe I can just like do one last thing over here and allocate, really at the end of the day, it was like an extra $50 or $100 a month. It wasn't like the thousands and thousands that I thought it was going to be. And it was an absolute game changer for me. So that is another thing that I outsource. And I know lots of people use things like HelloFresh or Fresh Prep or Good Food, things like that. Like that's an example of outsourcing. And one to just be aware too of like your mindset around that. And like, are you open to it? Do you feel good about spending that money? Do you want to do more of it? But I use Fed meals. They're already made for me because I'm also like, oh, I don't want to cook at the end of the day also. So like, but that's another way of outsourcing. The last thing I'll say is I've also started getting a parent helper. And I hope, and I really, really hope that by the time my daughter is older, that this is going to be something that's normalized. Just like we kind of normalize. I think the cleaner has become a lot more normalized in the last like 30 to 40 years. I think this is the next step. But especially with my husband away, like I used to have a friend that did it. Now I have, funny enough, like a friend's son that comes over and he helps like unload the dishwasher, take out the garbage, put away some laundry, like that kind of like basic stuff. Stuff that just like starts to overwhelm day to day to day. And I don't have to hire him for like 8 hours at a time. He can come for a couple hours here and there. Same thing with when I had a friend, like she'd come over for a visit and she'd do that for like 2 hours and then we'd hang out. And so there's just so many creative ways to get help, to outsource. I know people that like have their laundry done. There's just so many different things that you can do to outsource and pull some of those things off your plate. And I just wanted to share that really transparently. A, on the money side in terms of mindset, but B, also on the time side and the life side, because this, like making your money work for you, is one of the most powerful things I believe that you can do for yourself because it makes it so that you do get your time back. But there is still some time required to set that up and to make that
Yes.
work. And the whole point of it, in my opinion, is not just to be buying back more of your time to then still be doing all of the dishes and all of the laundry and all of the cleaning and all of the things that need to happen to make a household run. And the whole point of it is to have your money support you for the life that you want to have. And so I want to share that to just help you remind people, like zoom out here, just like Andrea did with like, the cult, the purpose here. And what I invite you to do, how I want you to look at your money is like what's the life I want to live, and how can money support me to do that? And how can I create the money situation that's going to allow me to live a life that I love in 30 years, and in 15 years, and in 5 years, and today, and to not lose sight of the fact that money is one of the things that can truly change your life and allow you to live intentionally every step along the way.
Oh my gosh. We gotta end it there. That is such a another beautiful way of putting it. And I absolutely love that. And thank you for sharing that. I think it's easy. It's kind of like the people who are like, oh, I don't get plastic surgery. I don't get Botox. It's like, oh, I don't have help. Not that you were saying that. You have been extraordinarily honest this entire conversation, but just to even share things like I have someone who helps me unload my dishwasher. I think that's epic. That is so awesome. And what I'm probably guessing is that's buying you time with your daughter. When you're not unloading the dishwasher, when you're not even making, like, I love fresh prep, but there's still quite a bit of work that goes into it. You're picking the meals, you are messing up your kitchen, you're having to wash the little containers to give back. It's amazing. I love it. We'll put both Fed and fresh prep codes in the show notes, but it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of time away from my kids. Let's be honest. So I think that's so cool. And also, I should add that there's things like what you're describing that there could be trades. Like, imagine that friend who spent 2 hours with you and then you guys hung out afterwards. Like, imagine she wanted some coaching and you were like, great, I can't pay, I can't afford to pay you right now. How about you do 2 hours and I do 2 hours of coaching for you? Or I can coach yourself. There's so many cool ways to also make your money work for you that are like quote unquote money, but are just exchanges of value.
That's all that money is. And I
Yes.
think it like we forget that it gets mixed up, but at the end of the day, that's all that it is it's a way to track that exchange of value. That's all that it is.
Good
And you're right, it
point.
doesn't necessarily have to be money. Like babysitting swaps are a brilliant one,
Oh.
like with another family, like, hey, we want to do a date night, we'll take you take our kid, and or we want to spend an evening going to a real estate investing seminar, or we want to read a book about real estate investing, or whatever that is, right? Like, trade it off, right? Like you can also then the next week you take their kid and they get to do these things. So like that's another really great example of it. And I think as we're getting older, like our time becomes more valuable, and we can also look at it as like mentoring the younger generation too, right? Like that's another thing that I look at. I'm like, I hope that when the people that we get to support, I hope that we get to help them along the way too. And like, and I think about how what an impact certain people had in my life, in my trajectory when I was young and doing some of these, like I stained fences, I pulled weeds, I did, like we all have, like I didn't start that far back in my career. But like those people, some of them were really pivotal and I learned so much and it was really inspiring. And so I think that's another part that I always try and keep in mind too, is like, how do I, like, it's not just money. It's like the whole picture of at home. Like, am I training? They're supporting me. I'm supporting them. And how do we make this a mutually a win-win for everybody? And yeah, money, time, energy, all those things are ways that we can make that happen.
Yes. Lisa, thank you so much for your time and your honesty and, man, giving me the non-Oxford Dictionary definition of real estate investing and just kind of a little peek behind the curtain on your life. I think it's fascinating. So thank you. And I hope to see everybody at, I'm excited to see you at the Millennial Millionaire Summit and hope our listeners will join us as well. And thank you. You're a gem.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a great conversation, and I so appreciate your curiosity, your honesty, your transparency, your vulnerability, and I am so honored to have you be a part of the summit. I know that what you share is going to be super helpful and inspiring, and if I'm allowed to say this, I think we're going to be on the path of helping more millennials become millionaires with purpose.
Heya! Thank you for listening. You can access all resources mentioned in this episode via my website, andreabarr.com/podcast. And let's chat on Instagram. I'm at Andrea Barr Coaching and I reply to every DM I get. If you loved this episode, don't forget to quickly hit that button on your podcast app to give me a 5-star rating and drop in a review. It would truly mean the world. And if you're like me and love to share things that you love, send this episode to a friend who you think would appreciate this topic. Thanks again for listening, and I'll chat with you next week.